Hello, and welcome to Mornings with Joel, Commercial Real Estate Podcast, where we focus on rising stars and established players in commercial real estate and talk to them about how they are building legacies in today's marketplace. Hey, we'd like to welcome all to the Mornings with Joel CRE Podcast. Thank you again for being here with us. We're very excited today because we have a special guest as well, Patricia Luna. And if you're not familiar with an organization called LISC, you should be. And she's going to go over a lot of details as to why her organization has been so successful in deploying millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to investors that are normally challenged in getting their deals done and the like. So Patricia, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you today.
I'm so glad to be here.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, first of all, tell us who you are and what is LISC, and then we'll kind of go into your background a little bit. So,
absolutely.
So, who are you, Patricia?
Deeper question than I was expecting. So LISC is Local Initiative Support Corporation. It is a national nonprofit. It's a CDFI, Community Development Finance Institution. A lot of folks are not familiar with this designation. It's actually comes from the U.S. Treasury. It means we are a nonprofit, but we are also a finance institution. So primarily what that means for most CDFIs is we make loans. Our model is a national non, and we've been around since the, for more than 40 years. Our model is a national umbrella that serves and supports local offices in most metro areas in the U.S. We have 38 offices and counting. I lead the lending efforts for LISC Atlanta. My service area, if you will, we really do put the L, the local, in LISC. Mm-hmm. My service area is the five metro counties for Atlanta, which is Fulton, DeKalb, Clayton, Gwinnett, and Cobb. We do have a rural department that can work with rural communities. We define that as communities of 50,000 people or fewer. That's a separate from me, but certainly I can make introductions and help folks get access to those options as well.
Gotcha. So we'll definitely dive into a little bit more of that because it's almost like you're the best kept secret out there. Like you said, a lot of people don't know about you, but that's one reason why I wanted to have you on the show. A little bit about your background. I mean, you're a lawyer, I understand, by profession. That's kind of your background. How in the world did you come into a position of running a local initiative, CDFI, here in Atlanta?
So I am a lawyer by training and by practice. I spent a long time representing institutional lenders, private equity, in on the lending side, with an emphasis in commercial real estate. I got my start back pre-crash doing CMBS deals.
Okay.
That was a lot of volume, a lot of go-go mm-hmm. kind of times. Then I've also, as you know, the crash kind of slowed that work pretty significantly. If there's been any kind of deal with collateral, I've mostly worked on it. But my emphasis, I did spend about 5 years in Wells Fargo's affordable housing lending line of business.
Okay.
I was not in the business role there. I was kind of a liaison between outside counsel and the line of business. But that got me a lot of good experience with working with low-income housing tax credits, new markets tax credits, solar historical tax credit, whatever. So when I went back to law practice, that was really where I concentrated. That brought me into contact with lots of affordable housing developers. It also brought me into contact with Invest Atlanta. And Dale Royal is the executive director of LISC Atlanta. And he and I worked together in a lawyer-client capacity back in his prior role. So, okay. And he posted a note saying, come be a lender for LISC. And I knew LISC. I had, you know, in my affordable housing practice, we had overlapped in a number of ways. When he posted for a lender, I was like, yes, I want to get on the business side. I want to get into my city. My law practice had been national. I want to really work and help the folks who really need it. So we work to get developments done that would not otherwise get done through traditional banks. So I'm really excited to talk more about that.
Gotcha. So no, that's really exciting. So you mentioned you've been around for 40 years, but again, you're not super well known from that standpoint. So is this a little small organization, or how many millions would you say you have under AUM?
I am not sure, honestly. I will say we have more than 500 people across the country working for us. The reason we're lesser known, I mean, and we are very well known in the Northeast and the Midwest, which is kind of where our where we live or we're started. We have only been in Atlanta since 2019. This is kind of, you know, we're trying to get our name out there. We can really be a tool to help projects get done.
Yeah. Very interesting. So, you know, and that's something that I've noticed. I was looking up some of the data, and 750 million AUM, 350 million committed. You know, so this isn't just kind of a little fly by night. Got you know, $500 to invest. This is a much larger operation here that you have in place.
We lent last year.
My podcast goodbye. Yeah, I'm sorry. Somebody keeps calling me.
We lent nearly $12 million last year, and that was my second year in this role. So we're really getting the engine going. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So now I know that Liz has a bunch of different initiatives, and you mentioned about each one kind of being, because I know that there's Liz operations in other cities as well. It's not just Atlanta. Actually, for the sake of our audience, what other cities are they in? Just off the top of your head. I don't know if you know.
Oh, all gosh. I do not know all 38.
Oh, there's 38. I didn't know there were 38.
Yes. But there are, you know, so we're in we're in Washington, D.C., Rhode Island, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, Bay Area, Kalamazoo, Michigan, San Antonio, Memphis. Yeah, there's a bunch.
All right, I'll let you off the hook. That's good.
Just around. I mean, most of the major metropolitan areas in the U.S.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you've got 37 locations, that definitely would cover all of that. So I certainly appreciate you bringing that to our attention. So now I know that Liz, you have this capital that you raise from, because you're a nonprofit, from what I understand, right? That's right. But with those funds that you've been able to raise, you've kind of broken them into different buckets, if you will. How does that actually break down? First of all, let me go back for a second. What is the box for LISC? And what I mean by that is, what type of deals are you looking to do? What type of deals will you not do because they fall outside of your scope?
Right. So LISC is looking for affordable housing, obviously. Mm-hmm. We can, and our definition of an affordable project is 20% of the units are going to be offered at least 80% AMI rents.
Okay.
So we prefer, obviously, from a mission perspective, higher affordability, deeper affordability, mm-hmm. but, you know, that's where our threshold is. We can do mixed use projects as well, as long as the housing component maintains that affordability. Mm-hmm. We also can work on commercial projects, that have a strong community aspect to them. We look to support developers of color, particularly emerging developers of color. Our loan amounts, we also have some small business lending that we mm-hmm. do as well. So our loan amounts start at $100,000 and they go up from there. There is no real technical maximum. We do have our own balance sheet as well as other loan capital that we fundraise, but above $8 million, things get to be a little trickier. We have to do additional levels of approval. Timing can be an issue at that point. So I'd say our sweet spot is probably in the $2 to $5 million range.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do market rate, except we can talk. We've got another line of sort of another group within LISC that we'll talk about. That's the Black Economic Development Fund. That I believe you want us to discuss as well. But from a LISC, just basic lending perspective, we don't do market rate projects. We don't work with sort of alcohol, tobacco, vape shops, sex stores, strip clubs, stuff like that. Trying to think. We can offer subordinate financing if there's a gap in traditional projects, in traditionally financed projects. So that's one place where we plug in. We don't tend to compete directly with the big banks on things like LIHTC projects, construction loans for that. Where we really excel on those kinds of projects are pre-development financing and then filling a gap if that's required.
Okay. All right. So that's very interesting. So you mentioned, let's take a little bit of a deeper dive on that, if you don't mind. You mentioned subordinate financing. We all know what that means, but let's say for an example, you do have that gap. Does that money come in as bridge? Does it come in as, not bridge, excuse me, does it come in as mezzanine? Does it come in as preferred equity? Or how do you normally structure that?
It comes in as a subordinate second lien on the real estate.
Okay, just a subordinate second lien. And that's during construction or post-construction?
During construction. Okay. We actually financed a project like that last year. It was affordable housing. There were credits, tax credits on it. A traditional bank was the lead lender and tax credit purchaser, and there was just a gap. So we came in and filled it.
Okay, great. Does there have to be low-income house tax credits on a deal in order for you guys to engage, or
for subordinate financing?
Well, just in general.
No, not at all. Okay. No, we really want to see some kind of affordability covenant. So if a project has invest Atlanta money in it or some other financing from a government source where they will require affordability and monitor that affordability. If we're going to be in an affordable project, that's what we'd like to see, because otherwise just sort of, if we're in for construction and we're taking the developer's word for it, oh, of course this is going to be affordable, and then we're repaid in stabilization.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have a whole lot of levers to pull to ensure that that happens.
Right.
But no, we do not have to, it doesn't have to be just tax credits.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was asking, because you really, the big issue that you get into is the monitoring of the, you know, affordability component. So that's why I wondered about that. But some deals, you know, they may not perform as well if they're stretched out over 10 years. So that's why I was wondering about that, which you would have with the LIHTC situation. Right. So that's very interesting. So as long as there's some type of monitoring component, then that would serve well. What about opportunity zones? Is there any special way that you structure deals related to opportunity zones, or any desirability because it's in an OZ, or, you know, anything like that?
We always look for LMI transactions. That's a mission component for us. We don't have a ton of opportunity zone financing tools. I think you and your audience may be aware that's been a difficult product to kind of energize as it's been in the market. And so our focus isn't specifically around opportunity zones, although, like I said, because of the nature of where they're located, we would always look at that kind of project.
Right. I would think that you would probably have a good bit that are in opportunity zones just based on the nature of the type of lending that you do.
Absolutely.
Now, one question that we actually talked about on air and off air as well, actually off air, because we didn't talk about this today yet, but debt versus equity. You mentioned about pre-dev money and things like that. Talk to me a little bit about that, and how does that money actually work? Because generally when you think of pre-dev, you think of equity. So how does List define pre-development capital and deploy it?
Well, it is debt. We don't, unfortunately, have an equity product. We are still trying to figure out how that might look as an organization. But it would be debt. We would look to be taken out by construction financing, frankly. We can deploy it unsecured, up to $500,000. But if you have the land, we can lend up to 85% LTV on the land.
Okay.
And that would be an as-is appraisal, we would look for as complete on the construction financing as is on pre-dev.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So that sounds good. And if there's debt currently on the land, then I would assume you would retire that and go in first position, or how would that look?
That would be the scenario, yes.
That would be the scenario. Okay. All right.
And that would, I mean, unfortunately, be subject to the LTV limitations that we would be, you know, looking at, so.
Right, right. So that would have to all fit in that particular situation. Okay, gotcha. And you said that because it is debt, you said your range is generally 2 to 5 million. So it sounds like smaller projects are ones that you really kind of focus in on. Have you found that pretty much to be the case?
I mean, I think we, you know, it really does kind of vary. The project that I mentioned where we were subordinate lender, that's that was a $40 million. I'm sorry, forgive me. They all run together, sure. But it was a pretty large LIHTC transaction.
Okay.
I believe the senior debt on that was something like $18 million. We provided pre-development funding last year for a very large project at Atlanta First United Methodist downtown. Mm-hmm. And we provided $2 million of pre-development financing. Now, the careful listeners will have noted, I just said we can only go up to $500,000 unsecured. Right. We worked with partners on that project to participate. So we worked with Mercy Community Capital, another CDFI, and Reinvestment Fund, another CDFI, to combine to provide the $2 million of pre-development financing. And that consists of two phases where I believe they are at something like $330 million TDC.
Wow.
So those are ways we can stretch our dollars to help those bigger projects come to mm-hmm. fruition. In terms of the smaller projects, I think we really excel at the infill, the neighborhood projects, the smaller placement of affordable housing. I'm working on a project right now that I'm really excited about that is renovating the ground floor of an empty commercial building and then adding two floors of affordable housing on top of it.
Okay.
And our loan for that has not, our loan for that is somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 million. So okay. I think, you know, that's if we're just doing the project as opposed to partnering or providing pre-dev, that's where I think we really excel.
Gotcha. So I like what you're saying from the standpoint of creativity. You know, it's not just one and done, if you will. You know, you'll find a way to basically get in and find a way to make it work. So on the gap financing, is that capped at 8 million as well? Or is there a different metrics related to gap financing?
No, the $8 million is a process kind of cap. Okay. It's not really, I mean, we can go above that if we need to.
Right.
It's just, we get into more levels of approval. It just takes longer to get things done. So we can work and stretch to make those kind of larger projects mm-hmm. happen. Certainly. It's just not exactly where our strength lies, I don't think.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really interesting. You know, creativity is always a desire of emerging developers because a lot of times you don't have something that just fits the box. And, you know, as well as I do in the lending world, it's the idea of, do you really want to get the deal done or do you just want to find a way not to get it done? And creativity always comes into play. So we certainly appreciate you doing that.
All our deals have hair on them, like every single one of them.
Really?
Has hair on them. So it is, you know, that is the frustrating part and the joy of working for a CDFI. I talk about our underwriting standards, and they are, you know, they're with a bank, you've got hard and fast, and mm-hmm. with a CDFI, pretty much no. I mean, if I can tell a story and if I can mitigate these particular credit exceptions, then we can have a conversation.
Yeah. As long as the neighborhood benefits, I guess you'll twist and turn and kind of try to find a way.
I want to be clear, however, yes, I don't want us to go too far into, you know, we do underwrite. We do look at things the way a bank does. But we just do have that additional mission component that will allow us to think about things creatively.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you.
So it has to work on some level.
It all needs to make sense.
Yes. Yeah.
So a little bit of hair is okay, but not absurd.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, all right. Gotcha. And then with these other participation from other CDFIs, Is that something that you guys initiate, or is the sponsor required to go out and find other CDFIs and bring them to you to help structure a deal?
No, we do that.
Okay.
We do that work. I think a lot of CDFIs are in a similar space as LISC, but we don't consider ourselves competitors. There's more than enough work to get done
mm-hmm.
for all of us. So we're all mission aligned in trying to ensure that these projects get done.
Gotcha. All right. Well, no, that makes sense. Here's something that we talked about also offline, your turn times. Obviously you mentioned that you're doing great work, but there's not like you have a staff of 500,000 people, right? So what turn time should be expected by someone looking to work with LISC?
I would say you can have, it's the old, you can have two of three. I mean, we can be flexible and patient, but we're not fast. I do want to be real transparent that LISC is not a nimble lender, and we're a little bit capacity constrained in Atlanta because I'm the only one for right now. I think if everything is buttoned up, if you get me all the documents, all the due diligence right out of the gate that I need, we could be looking at it's probably going to take about 30 to 60 days to get to a commitment letter. That's a firm commitment. Mm-hmm. And then we do one sort of positive is we do all our closings within house legal. That is to save borrowers money that they mm-hmm. would otherwise be paying for outside counsel.
Mm-hmm.
But that also is a capacity constraint because our in-house legal department is only so big. So that's another probably 60 days for closing.
Okay. So roughly 120 days?
Something like that. Yeah. And again, that never happens because it's never that buttoned up. It's never that clean. Yeah. There's always issues. There's always a need to do more. So that would be the ideal best case scenario.
Okay. Well, at least we clearly know, what that looks like. So I appreciate it.
And that makes us not really a great fit for acquisition funding, honestly. If you got a real patient seller, that can help. That can work sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not that doesn't really fit our paradigm pretty very well.
Yeah. No, I understand. So, all right. Gotcha. So let's pivot a little bit, and discuss some of the specifics that LISC does. You do have a capital innovation lab. What's that all about? Do you have much detail on that?
So the capital innovation lab is more or less what it sounds like. It is really just, it's trying to do some different things, so it's trying to do trying new ideas. So mm-hmm. and that to an extent is also, the ideas come through our funders, not just from the communities. So we have a Black Restaurant Fund. We've got a diverse supplier, a supplier diversity initiative. We in Atlanta just closed $100,000 to an insurance agent here who is opening his own agency through the supplier diversity program. We've got pre-development for HBCUs, which is capital for real estate projects that HBCUs may mm-hmm. May undertake. So there's a lot going on there, and really it's run through our strategic investments side of LISC, which mm-hmm. is also runs the Black Economic Development Fund, which can fund market rate projects. So really though, that the strategic investments group is mm-hmm. there to provide these innovations and things that are really much more outside the sort of traditional LISC box.
Okay. All right. Definitely understand that. And my camera is actually froze up on my end, but can you still see me okay?
You are frozen, but I can hear you just fine.
Okay. All right. So we must be having a couple of technical difficulties here, but we'll keep going and, see, hopefully that will work itself out as we go along here. All right. So I definitely want to circle back to the Black Economic Development Fund. We're going to touch on that in a minute.